Welcome to Wormhole Waffles, a Stargate podcast. Welcome to Wormhole Waffles. I'm your host, Chelsea, and with me is my co-host, Arzu.
Hello!
Last week, we talked about Stargate SG-1 Season 5, Episodes 11 and 12, where Sam got kidnapped by ninjas, and we got to see our friend Martin again. Today, we're going to be talking about Season 5, Episodes 13 and 14, Proving Ground and 48 Hours. Proving Ground premiered on March 8th, 2002, was written by Ronald Wilkerson and directed by Andy Makita. 48 Hours premiered on March 15th, 2002, and was written by Robert C. Cooper and directed by Peter F. West. So these are the first episodes to air after 9/11. I would think that they had been written prior to 9/11, but I don't know what writing deadlines are like for this kind of show. So
I think you're right, because the two episodes last week, some places say they aired back to back, and some places say that like Wormhole Extreme aired like a couple days later, like they wouldn't have had time to pull it yet. Mm-hmm. Either way, for it to stop that abruptly immediately after September 11th makes me think that these were just supposed to keep airing, and they kind of pulled everything for a while and just offset it by a few months.
Yeah, because the first episode does talk about military training. So, like, that's an interesting choice for their first episode back after 9/11, whether that's supposed to be, like, in support of the military, or they delayed it by a few months so it wasn't so military-heavy right after such an event.
I think next episode, 48 Hours, with a lot of, like, can we trust the Russians, and, like, a lot of us versus them happening.
Yeah.
More interesting to see. And like, I don't think it was written after the fact, because like the Russians were an ongoing thing. And I keep forgetting his name in the show. I just keep calling him Q. John Delancey's character.
Simmons.
Like, his whole shtick had been well established before. Mm-hmm. So I don't think any of it was a direct response to what happened, but it is interesting given the...
I would be interested to know if they adjusted any of the script because of 9/11.
It'll be interesting to see like the end of the season, and especially going into season 6, what changes.
From what I remember, I don't feel like the show gets more militaristic at all. I think it pretty much continues as it always was.
It's not the militaristic side of it that I'm curious about. It's like the patriotic side of it.
Right. Doing this for like our country.
The serve our country, us versus them, freedom fries of it all. Like, that's what I'm interested to see.
And in that case, you're definitely right that 48 Hours has more of that than Proving Ground does.
Yeah. But like you said, I don't think 48 Hours was written after. I think it was written before.
Yeah. It just, like, happens to... I mean, it's just like, like you said, like an ongoing issue with, you know, our political ties with the Russians.
Because they, like, they film a whole season in, like, a chunk. Mm-hmm. So, like, a several month chunk. So, like, while they're filming the beginning episodes, they might be finishing work on the latter end of the season. But if I had to guess, all of the season was written before the mid-season hiatus.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, like, with your experience in the field. Like, if you have, like, a 22-episode season of something, are generally all the scripts written before you start filming, or is it more as an as-you-go kind of basis?
In my experience, because to be clear, I've worked on movies and series with shorter seasons. But that said, in my experience, and based on like what I know about it, is like the writer's room section and the filming section operate kind of like two separate school years. Like, it's several consecutive months of work for the writers, and several consecutive months of work for the actors that overlap slightly. Like, the writers will start before the actors do, and the actors will finish when the writer's room is done. But I think a big chunk of that does overlap. So, but even then, like, they're usually done filming or almost done filming by the time the season premieres. Or, like, halfway through filming at best. So if I had to guess, at the very least, most, if not all, of the scripts were probably done.
Yeah. They just
by
might have tweaked
like by the main break in September.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, the main scripts
probably that'll done, be something.
Yeah, like whether or not as they were filming,
I think we're really going to start to feel it, if at all.
So you're cutting out.
Yeah, but yeah, I would be interested to see what, if anything, changes.
Yeah. Okay, so how about we get started? Arzu, would you please summarize these episodes?
Yes, so this week we had the exact problem that I said we didn't have last week, which is that the first episode was vastly more interesting. So in Proving Ground, SG-1 runs an escape room for four trainees.
Yeah, basically.
The whole time, they're basically running a training exercise for four potential SGC recruits. And it was just so much fun. It was a great episode.
It was fun.
And then 48 hours, Teal'c is stuck in the void and they need the Russians' help to get him out.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised it took this long for somebody to get stuck.
That's true. But I feel like if I think about it too much, it makes my brain explode trying to like think about a person being stuck in a Stargate.
Oh, yeah. It's just, it seems like such a natural story thing. It's like you can't, you can't come out, but you can't go back where you came from.
Yeah.
So I'm just surprised it took this long. But I guess Apophis is dead, so they need to do something while they think of the next big bad. Yeah. We went from like aliens being the big bad to like the American and Russian governments being the big bad.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, balance.
You know. Yeah. I guess.
Okay. Let's do our quote reveal. Last week I gave you the quote. So all this time we've been saving the world, we've really only been saving the good old U.S. of A., huh? And your guess was that Jack is speaking and Hammond has just briefed them on how the implications of whatever they've been doing is not as widespread as they thought. And your backup choice for who was speaking was Sam because Daniel is not that sarcastic. Well, joke's on you because that was Daniel. He was being that. Daniel absolutely is sarcastic.
Doesn't seem witty enough.
He makes quips like that too. Like I think being around Jack kind of rubs off on him, and he ends up being that way, like snarky and sarcastic too.
Well, like in retrospect, it makes sense. But last week, I was so sure that this man's never said a sarcastic thing in his life.
Well, better luck next time.
Yay.
Okay, so Proving Ground. Yeah, it opens straight up with SG-1 doing a training exercise with four recruits, one of which we've seen before, Lieutenant Haley. I guess she's not a lieutenant, is she? Cadet Haley.
Yeah.
And then there's three others that we meet. What's the main guy's name? Elliot. Elliot, Satterfield, and Grogan are the other ones. And I feel like his name is almost like Gorgon. But anyway. So I saw in your notes that this set very much looks like a set, but I think it's supposed to.
I know, but like it just made me wonder like what is going on with the budget.
But I think it's supposed to look cheap because it's supposed to be like we're doing this training exercise in the field with a random.
I know it's intentional, but it's like why did you? It's like in longer running shows, sometimes they would do what was called a bottle episode, which is like two or three cast members and one setting the whole time. And that was usually the point in the season where they just didn't have money. So they didn't want to pay for extra sets. They didn't want to bring in extra actors. They didn't want any extras, like nothing like that. And I'm like, this does have extras in it, but there's no aliens this week.
Right.
The explosions look fake because they're supposed to. Yeah. But I'm like, was this your point where you kind of ran out of money? Like,
I mean, it's mid-season.
Maybe so I guess that tracks. I just thought that was very, very funny.
You know, they're saving up for bigger stuff later in the season.
I guess so. Because even the next week, like,
it's still it's all pretty grounded. The SGC. Like, yeah.
So.
Well, the next two episodes after this is a two-part arc that has a new set and lots of costumes. So
they were saving money for that.
Probably. Yeah, I would guess so. So, but yeah, so the basically this whole time I was like, I wonder. So it's, I think the SG teams go on rotation of, you know, this week it's SG1's turn, next week it's SG2's turn to like train a new batch of recruits. And I'm like, I wonder how much they enjoy it versus does it feel like work? Like, do they think it's tedious or is it fun? It seems like some of them are enjoying it. Like Daniel and Sam seem to kind of be into it.
Oh, Daniel was having the time of his life. Except he also kind of seemed to get out of it kind of easy.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes me think the man, like, Daniel Jackson, not Michael Shanks, but, like, Daniel's not much of an actor. Because the entire episode, like, Jack is training them, and he's like, you have, like, one more day of training, and then if you don't meet my standards, like, I'm not gonna recommend any of you for the SGC, all of that, in this really stern voice that Sam really seemed to enjoy. And so did I, same girl. But as soon as he's, like, done lecturing them, he takes them to this one last exercise where, like, Elliot does something wrong, and then Jack conveniently gets a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
And tries to get rid of them. And then these vans show up, or these SUVs show up, and he gets into a gunfight with a bunch of other soldiers. And suddenly, like, the kids are thrown into a real mission. And I'm like, immediately, I'm like, this isn't real. This is the training exercise.
Right.
Like, this is where he's going to determine, like, what they do in a crisis, because it's not a safe
control zone. Yeah.
And, like, it just kept building and building and building. I'm like, it's so cute that they made an entire escape room for them.
Yeah.
With, like, puzzles and clues and them all getting involved and, like, I don't know. I thought that was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. But, yeah, I think Daniel did definitely have it easy. Because even, like, Teal'c did more acting than he did. they start off with some, like, really easy stuff, and they go into, they think that the SGC is under a foothold situation. And so then they all go off to the SGC together. And I just have to say, I really appreciate how when they went to the SGC and they were, like, going in via that bunker, like, style entrance in the middle of the forest, which I've complained about before having zero security, It now has both a code lock and it's, like, welded shut. So you have to, like, use a strip of explosives to open the code box and then enter code. I'm like, finally, somebody listened to me and realized this was incredibly insecure for a military installation to have this random opening in the middle of the forest.
They, you know what? They were probably setting up the training exercise and they went, oh shit, like, you could just walk in.
Yeah.
We should do something about that.
Okay, they finally realized how much of a problem it is. Oh my goodness.
So one of the cadets is played by Grace Park, which, you know, fans will recognize from Battlestar Galactica. She's not the first Battlestar Galactica actor to pop up on this show.
I still
blanking on who
that.
Else was here. But
there have been several that you've pointed out.
There's been
out.
A few, but yeah. So I just saw her and I'm like, Grace Park, what are you doing here? But
I guess I need to watch that show.
I made it to the end of season 3 and got very depressed. So I stopped watching it.
Okay, well, that makes me not want to watch
it.
Then.
It was very heavy. And, like, I get that it kind of ends on a more optimistic, maybe, depending on who you ask, note. But I couldn't do it. It was just very upsetting. So I just stopped.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure if I'm ready to do that emotional labor in this year. I mean, we're starting, we are now in 2024. We are speaking to you from the
Hello!
But even now in this brand new year, 2024, I don't know that I'm ready for that kind of emotional labor.
We're like, welcome to the new year of 2024. And anybody listening to this is like, it's April. It has been 2024 for a while.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're speaking to you from the past then.
Right. I don't know why I did that. All podcasts are speaking to you from the past.
Yeah.
Unless it's live. True. Anyway.
Sometimes it's live. But we're, like, really from the past because
like that thing that happened a couple weeks ago. We have no idea about that.
There's
can
probably,
you believe it? I can't.
I mean, the amount of insane things that have happened in the first 3 days of January.
That,
like,
seems like a pretty safe statement to make.
Yeah, who knows what, you know? Insert political figure here that has done this insane thing.
Can you believe the thing with the dinosaurs? Like, that was shocking.
I mean, you could just in general say that insane thing that Trump did, and it's going to be true, no matter when you say it.
Anyway. Oh my god. Anyway.
When's the next submarine explosion type event? Then.
You know. Oh my god. Clearly, like, it's already happened. We just don't know. Sure.
Yeah, we just thought we're in blissful ignorance of the next explosion type event.
Oh boy.
Anyway, their snacks are weird on this show. So Sam is eating a banana and Jell-O.
Okay. All I saw was the Jell-O. I just had to point this out.
I'm like, their obsession with Jell-O for one thing is weird, but then like a banana and Jell-O, that's a weird combo.
I don't even know why it's Jell-O. Like things like pasta or soup that you can kind of like push around without actually eating to make it look like you're eating.
Yeah.
I understand, but like,
I think we've had this discussion before, and my argument was that Jell-O isn't super filling, so you could eat it on multiple takes and probably feel fine. And your counter argument was that it still has a lot of sugar, so it could still make you feel bad because of all the sugar you're consuming.
Yeah, because I was just about to say.
Yeah, we've had this exact
same conversation before.
I feel like I'm still sticking on my side of it. Could be like low sugar Jell-O, and like it's Zach easy also to consume. Eating
Jell-O, like red Jell-O.
Yeah, yeah. He had red, and Sam had blue.
Okay,
Sam
always had blue. Jack, here's a question: why are you eating Jell-O with a fork?
I mean, it works,
but why?
Anyway, I also had this comment that I feel like all of this training, or at least some of it, should be off-world as well, because, you know, most of their missions are going to be off-world. And then later in the episode, Hammond mentions how he's put in a request for the budget to build an off-world base. I'm like, oh, there we go. Okay. We are thinking off-world about
where?
Just, like, pick a random abandoned planet that you can, like, build
a base also, like, on. The audacity of the American military being like, yeah, we're just going to set up a base off-world because that's the thing we're allowed to do.
Why not? Who's going to stop them?
Well, they have as many bases around the world as they do. Who's going to stop them? But, like, it's not yours.
If it's an abandoned planet, who does it belong to? Well, who does it belong to, then?
Not you.
Well, it doesn't belong to
the American military, not you specifically.
If it doesn't belong to anybody, it's free game.
Somebody put the Stargate there, so it used to be somebody's. So
well, the ancients put the Stargates out there, but that doesn't mean that they colonized them all.
Just saying.
I mean, they put... What, just like hundreds
there
of thousands
doesn't mean
of
you
Stargate?
Have to put a military base there. You know what I mean? Like,
it makes sense though.
Like, put like a farm there or an amusement park. Like, you don't have to put a military base there. You know what I mean? It's a little if you build it, they will come. Like, build less bases and you'll have less problems.
But it makes sense is actually for the next episode. When they can't have their teams coming home, and so they have to send them through the Russian Stargate. If they had a base off-world, then all of the teams could have just returned to that base off-world. And then when they finally got the Stargate back up and running, they could have come home.
But given that the whole Stargate program started because of one specific threat that is now gone, arguably you could just shut it down. And you wouldn't have this problem to begin with.
Well, sure, but it's kind of like Pandora's box.
Out of the tube now.
Yeah, like, we've already started. We might as well keep going now.
Yeah.
Well, plus it's like, you know, killing... I mean, it's not even just kill. If we had only killed Ra and then buried the Stargate, you know, probably we would have been left alone. But it's like, we didn't stop there, you know? Now we've killed Apophis. Now we've killed Cronus. We've killed... Who else? I feel like there's been a couple more. But, you know, we've killed several gold, and, like, so we put our name on the map. And now the rest of them want to come for us, you know? So it's like, then that forces you to continue doing explorations to try to find new allies, better resources, other types of weapons or defensive, you know, measures in order to protect yourself from this threat that you've kind of brought upon yourself.
Don't bring the threat upon yourself.
Yeah, I mean
start by minding your own damn business.
If they had just stopped the program after they killed Ra, you know.
You just start by minding your own damn business.
Start by
look at how many military bases you don't need.
But yeah, now the cat's out of the bag, it's like, well, we might as well have an off-world program because you know that it's easier for other types of missions and yeah.
Yeah. But I guess the reason they don't send the kids off world in this episode is because they barely got it figured out on this world.
Right. Well, but they just don't even have an off world base yet. So, I mean,
even if they did, they're not ready.
They're not ready for it yet.
They're like, well, they barely got out of a warehouse without losing somebody. Like, you want to send them to another planet? Like, forget it. They're none of them fair. Are coming back.
Yeah. Anyway, so they get to the SGC and they're like walking through the hallways. And at first I was just like, are none of them going to question why the SGC seems to be deserted? And then they finally ran into some people, I think, but I was like, yeah, there's nobody around. Normally there's constantly people walking the
hallways. Cause they didn't have the budget for extra.
And so they make it to, I think, Sam's lab, and they're looking at some camera feeds across the base, and they see that Daniel is the one in charge, and everybody's been taken over with this foothold situation, and Teal'c has been taken over too. And I really just appreciate how everybody in this base got involved in this exercise. All of the random airmen were involved too. You know, everybody got their guns filled with blanks and all that kind of stuff. Probably, I want to say they were probably filled with paint, either that or everybody just was given some little paint tubes.
The little blood packs that you
use on your head. Yeah.
I feel like for everybody on base, this was just kind of a fun thing to do that they don't normally get to do.
Yeah.
But also when they eventually team up with Sam because they think Jack's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I do like that Sam stepped forward with a gun and started firing, because I'm like, they would have actually killed him.
Well, none of them had actual bullets.
That's true, but I don't trust them not to cause some real damage. So yeah. I just think it's funny that Sam had to take him out before anybody could actually hurt him.
She pointed her gun at him, but she didn't actually shoot. It was it Satterfield, I think, or Grogan? Was it Satterfield or Grogan? Yeah, they I shot Sam their. Shot. No, she pointed her gun at them, and that's how they knew that they could trust her. But it was actually one of the other ones that shot their Intar at them. Maybe it was Elliot actually shot the Intar. So it's just a stun,
right? Well, yeah. Still, I'm glad nobody got killed, because that was a legitimate concern
for sure. And Haley did a really good job acting through this whole thing, because she had to be able to show fake nanobots in the bloodstream and stuff like that. So she knew the whole thing. I was like, good for you.
She was also in on it. I would have cracked immediately.
I think I could do it.
No, I would have given something away.
I think I could do it because, I mean, the thing with those kind of things is you just have to know the right amount of detail to go into, you know?
Yeah.
If you don't mind, a quick personal story, there's this game that I played one time where it's you have three people and you kind of confer together. One person tells the other two a true story about their life. And then these three people go in front of an audience, and each of the three people tell their version of the story, and the audience has to figure out whose story it really is and who's lying.
Oh.
And when I did it, it was somebody else's story and I was lying, but everybody voted for me. So apparently I'm really good at making up bizarre details, because I went into the most detail. She gave a really basic story about going to her grandma's house, and so I filled it in with details about my own grandma's house. And because it had more detail, and because I was still partially telling the truth,
everybody thought it was you.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's that same kind of situation. You just have to know.
Even if I believe what I'm saying, I will crack. I'll forget. I'll lose track of something and I will crack. That's not the kind of lying I'm good at.
Oh, okay.
But I won't say what kind of lying I am good at.
Yeah, say what kind of lying are you
good at? No, because then it won't work anymore, because people will know.
Okay, well, tell me after we're done recording. Anyway, so Satterfield and Grogan at one point go to Daniel's office to figure out what's going on with the device that's causing this foothold situation. And it was so funny how, like, as soon as she walked into his office, she was just, like, looking at all of his stuff. And I'm like, babe, I know you like him, but focus. Focus.
It's embarrassing for her.
I know, right? And I was, like, a little annoyed with Haley for calling her out. Like, earlier in the episode, Haley told everybody else that Satterfield thought Daniel was cute. And I'm like, girl,
somebody else called her back. Somebody else, Jack called her out.
And I'm like, way to not have her back. What the hell?
But, like, even Jack did it.
I think that was only after Haley did.
Did she do it before? Like, because it was after the first training exercise.
Yeah, Haley did it pretty quickly after the first training. Yeah, yeah, because Haley said that she thought Daniel was cute.
And then Jack's like, so you hesitated because of your personal feelings.
Yeah.
Got it. Satterfield, what are you doing? Come on now.
I mean, we all think Daniel is cute, but, like, keep it together.
Most of us think Daniel is cute, but keep it together. No, that's not, that was mean. He's a cute guy.
He's objectively attractive.
He's objectively attractive. he will only reciprocate if you're a wall.
Hey, he likes women with curly hair. You know, maybe I've got a chance.
You know what you should do is, like, write some ancient words on your back.
Oh.
And your front. And then he'll pay attention.
Right? Yeah. I need to learn cuneiform.
Somebody else needs to learn it so they can write it for you, because I don't know how you're
sure. Doing. Well, sure. Yeah. But I mean, I could learn it and then just.
You want to keep that man forever? Get it tattooed. Get that tattooed on your body. You're going to keep that man forever. That was Sheree's problem. She didn't have any, like, tattoos of, like, obscure text.
Or it could even just be, like, Beowulf in the original, like, Old English.
You know what's really funny is, like, take a modern book and just write it in Old English.
Right. Or get it translated to cuneiform or, like, Egyptian hieroglyphs.
The hieroglyphs of, like, I'm trying to think of a book. I can't think of anything right now.
Twilight.
Twilight. Just get Twilight in cuneiform all over your body. That man's going to lock it down.
Because he never would read Twilight, so he wouldn't know.
He'd be like this ancient culture and their stories of vampires. He'd be like, so true, baby.
Absolutely. So, yeah, Jack accidentally gives up the plot because he helps, like, a random airman that had been stunned on the ground. And so the recruits are like, well, okay, you're also taken over. But Sam manages to keep herself safe, I guess, from their suspicions. Then we see the guy who, I've forgotten his name already, but he was the head of the academy, the Air Force Academy. Mm-hmm. And when we saw him previously in that last episode with Cadet Haley, he had no idea anything about the Stargate program because he didn't know what Sam did for a job. General Kerrigan, that's his name. And now he's there watching the recruits. So I'm guessing that the SGC wanted to start bringing in recruits. They're like, well, we need to bring the head of the academy into the fold so that he can hand pick who he thinks are the best candidates, you know? And he's loving it. He's just, like, watching the whole escape room thing, like, having a good old time.
Yeah, because he doesn't have to do anything.
Yeah. But, I mean, I feel like it's, like, he likes being involved, you know? It's kind of like, oh, I get to know this cool secret, you know?
Yeah. There's one thing these military boys like. It's a secret.
Absolutely. I get it. But, yeah, and so part of the reason that they trust Sam is that Haley has a theory that she wouldn't be able to be taken over by this alien device because of her, you know, previous Gua'uld, what would you call that? Influence, I guess? Because she's got her multivitamin.
Yes, the multivitamin.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, if you're using that logic, wouldn't that mean that it wouldn't work on Teal'c either? And yet, it did work on Teal'c, so that doesn't line up. Because the time that we had a real foothold situation, it didn't work on both Sam and Teal'c. for the same reason.
So plot hole?
Probably. Well, that, so I mean, it's like Haley came up with this theory to be like, oh yeah, we can totally trust Sam. The other recruits should have been like, hang on, but we know Teal'c was taken over, so that doesn't make sense.
But you're forgetting that the rest of them are stupid.
I guess so.
Maybe, and maybe I'm giving them too much credit. They really did just like not take this into account. But maybe Haley saying that was like a, like to see if they would catch that.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. But in a TV show, you wouldn't set something up and not pay it off. So yeah. Then not catching it should have like paid off somewhere.
Yeah.
Which makes me think they just forgot.
Yeah. I think so. Unless there's like, she was trying to imply that it wouldn't work on Sam's brain chemistry because of the previous symbiote presence, but Teal'c doesn't have the same brain chemistry. Like, it's a brain thing rather than a blood thing. You know?
But then why not just say that?
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know about that. But in the meantime, Daniel and Teal'c are just, like, waiting for the recruits to get to the point of, you know, storming the office. And they're just hanging out in Hammond's office, and it's so funny because, like, Daniel's like, this chair is really great, actually.
This is what happens when you don't pursue a life of academia, Daniel.
You get comfortable chairs. You get
comfy chairs.
The perks of being a general in the Air Force.
They got budget.
Right. And, like, Teal'c just, like, has a magnifying glass up to his eye looking at random stuff on Hammond's desk.
I love him. He's so wholesome. Yes.
So then the recruits come and storm the office, and they, like, plant some C4 that they don't realize is fake. And what's funny is, like, when they come in guns a-blazing with their INTARs so that they can just stun everybody, and Teal'c goes down with one hit. I'm like, in reality, I think it would take more than one hit on the INTAR to take him down. Or at least if it took him down initially, he would probably get up pretty quickly.
He was bored.
Well, he was faking it.
Yeah, but he was tired of pretending. So he's just like, that's it, I'm down.
I'm just going to lay on the ground for a little while. Take a little break. And so Satterfield goes back to protect Daniel from the blast, which of course doesn't go off because it's not real C4. And so then they're all like talking about it, like, congratulations, you passed the test kind of thing. And Daniel like smirks and like pushes his shoulder against Satterfield, and he's like, thanks for saving me back there. And I'm like, Daniel, she's like 20. Stop flirting with her.
Also, flirt with her if you want to, but we all know you're not going to do anything about it. So, like, don't do this to her.
I'm like, you're like 15 years older than her. Jack, keep it together. 15
years older than Sam.
Yeah, but it's different because
she's not 20.
Yeah. The minimum age being 35 rather than 20 makes a big difference.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, so
it's, you know, it's not even the age, it's the fact that he has no intention of following through that bothers me more.
No, I think it's more like it's the fact of her being a recruit looking up to someone who's her superior for the first time.
Oh yeah, okay, abusing that power dynamic.
Yeah,
I get it. Now if it's Sam and Jack with a power dynamic,
that's fine. That's fine because
everybody's older. Brain is done maturing. So.
Yes, exactly. They're all adults.
20 is an adult, part. But like everybody's got a cooked brain. Everybody's got a cooked brain.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so basically the test isn't really done yet because then they didn't realize that Cadet Haley was still going off to the gate room to try to turn the Stargate off. Which, of course, she's, like, still in on the plot and, you know, making this up. And it's all a test to see if Cadet Elliot is going to... Maybe he's a lieutenant? And the other ones are just cadets? Because I feel like one of them is a lieutenant.
Well, Elliot was in charge of the group, so it might have been Elliot.
Well, the IMDb says all four of them are lieutenants now. So maybe they, maybe when you graduate from the academy, you're no longer a cadet because they have graduated.
Could be.
And they're all lieutenants now because they've graduated. Anyway, Elliot still thinks a test, so he goes back to save Haley, and they, and he like specifically goes against direct orders by Hammond in order to go save her. And so then they reveal that it's been a test all along still. And so he has passed the test and they are going to let him join the brand new team SG-17.
Yay. Sorry. Nobody expanding. Else gets to join a team, but he does.
Not yet. I'm pretty sure we see Grogan on a future episode in another like random team, but I don't think we see the girls again.
Well, because Grace Park's going to start Battlestar in a couple of years.
Yeah, I guess so. And yeah, I don't know why they didn't bring Haley back, but whatever.
Whatever.
So what I think is interesting about this is that they're like, okay, Elliot, you're going to get to join the new SG team, SG-17, led by Major Mansfield. I'm like, wait, so now you're establishing that it's okay for a major to lead an SG team when, what, a year or two ago, you were saying that Sam could not lead an SG team even though she was a major at the time?
Because Sam's a girl. It's because Sam's a girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somehow she doesn't have enough experience despite having the same rank as the person who apparently does have enough experience.
Yeah. I guess you could make the argument that SG-17 is like literally the least important team because they're brand new.
And they keep dying.
And they don't want... No, it's SG-11 that keeps dying.
Sorry. Wrong SG team.
And SG-1 being the flagship team needs a colonel to lead it rather than a major, I guess. But it just still seems really misogynistic.
What if we promote Sam? Mm-hmm. And then she and Jack can get together?
Because they're like co-leads?
Yeah. Like co-run the team, like mom and dad.
Mm.
I had nothing intelligent to contribute, so I just went right for the Sam Jack.
I feel like I can't say much without giving away things.
Dude! Oh my god! If you're listening to this and you know what happens, can you DM me on Twitter? And tell me.
Thank you. I'm anyway. Like, I'm constantly debating how much to tell you and how much not.
Everything. Tell me if they kiss.
I think so.
No, like not in a dream and not in an alternate world. Like this Sam and this Jack.
To be fair, there's a lot of alternate reality type episodes.
Okay, but
so this, it's hard to keep track.
End game. Is it end game?
Okay, how about I tell you this?
Okay. This is it, guys.
It's kind of like a yes, but.
Oh.
Yes, they are end game.
Okay.
But you may not be satisfied in the way that it happens.
What does that mean?
Because they maintain the plot device of they're both serving in the Air Force and they cannot be public about it.
But they are together. I you know, I could work with that. I didn't really need him slapping her ass in the cafeteria. Like, you know what I mean?
Essentially, it's just, it becomes one of those things that, like, everybody knows, you know?
But it's canon, but they're together. I don't care if I don't see it. I'll take it. This was a win. Thanks for listening, everybody. Good night.
I feel like I just want to, like, hedge your expectations because it's not going to be like an episode where they like kiss and establish that they're a couple and tell everybody that they're a couple. You know, you're not going to get that.
You realize my last big sci-fi ship kissed once and then he died in her arms, right? Like this is the baseline we're going with. So if it's not that, it's already an improvement.
I already told you that none of the four SG-1 members die permanently in any of the three flagship shows.
That. Like, so. It's not that level of finality. And if you follow me on Twitter at all, you know I don't believe that to be final. But yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that. So, like, the bar is in the pits of Exegol.
That's true.
Which is, like, lower than hell. Mm-hmm. So, anyway. Okay. Moving on. You can't see this, but I'm dancing in my chair.
I feel like I should also warn you that going to, like, attempt to pair them with other people.
It's cute.
Yeah.
Cute.
Attempt is
and the I'll word. Drag them when they do. And by them, I mean the writers.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's fine. The course of true love never did run smooth. It's fine.
Yeah, you know, I gotta keep it interesting, I guess. Anyway, do you have anything else to say about Proving Ground?
No.
Okay. So, moving on to 48 Hours. So, our cold opens in the middle of a fight with a Gwold. There's, like, gliders who are shooting at SG-1, attempting to get back to the Stargate. And then we see, like, a cargo ship with Tanith in it. And I think that's old footage because he's not credited for the episode. So, yeah. I mean, all it is like, him sitting at the cockpit of the cargo ship. So, smirking, you know.
As he does.
As he does. So, they had gotten a tip from the Tok'ra that the Gwold might be scouting out this planet for a base. And so, confirmed, the Gwold were indeed scouting it for a base. So, who knows if they're going to still use it or not. Since the SGC knows about it, it's probably not. But anyway, Tanith was there. And Teal'c was the last one through the Stargate. And he had one of those big, like, rocket launcher style things with the... from the Gwold. It's like, I think it's probably one of the cannons from one of, like, a glider, because he's done that before, where, like, the glider has fallen and he's, like, rips the cannon off of it.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so he shoots that at Tanith. So Tanith is definitely dead now. But then as Teal'c is going back through the Stargate, Tanith's cargo ship crashes into the Stargate and disengages the wormhole prematurely. So he does go through the event horizon on his side, but does not come back through the event horizon in the SGC.
Yes.
So then we get this really weird problem of a person being stored in a Stargate.
And like I said off the top, I am shocked it took this long.
I mean, we've had other, like, Stargate errors before, but yeah, not the specific one of them getting stuck.
Yeah, like this just seems like a obvious choice for a wormhole, like, to get stuck in between. So right. I'm just very surprised that this is the first time it happened.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it makes for an interesting episode, certainly. And so I think Sam pretty much understands right away what the problem is, but has no idea how to fix it. And Jack had gotten a concussion on his way back, and so he kind of missed the explanation, so he comes back to Sam for an explanation, and she's, like, clearly really stressed out and does not want to have to re-explain it to him, but at the same time, he's genuinely interested in trying to help her, so she's just like, okay, so here's the problem. I'm like, oh, he's really trying to help. He has a concussion and he's really trying to help.
Because he cares.
Yeah. I'm like, let him fetch you coffee, babe. You know, he can do that. So they have to offset the iris so that their Stargate can't be used, because using their Stargate would erase Teal'c's energy signature. So they have... they coordinate with the Russian government to use the Russian Stargate for all their teams to come back home. And so then we kind of get this back and forth with, like, Sam at the SGC trying to figure stuff out, and then Major Davis and Daniel in Russia trying to negotiate the temporary use of their Stargate. And so we have Colonel Chekhov is back, and he's like, coming out guns blazing, like, ready to negotiate the best deal for his country. And I don't blame him, because, you know, they found out about the Stargate program and were promised a bunch of stuff that they never got. and, you know, they want to be a part of it. And I totally get it. Like, you know, despite all of our real and fictional issues with Russia, you know, they know about it. They want to be a part of it. And I get it.
But they're Russian and therefore the villain. So,
yeah. Villain light.
No, I mean, in like terms of how the show is presenting it to us. It's like they're wrong for wanting this thing that America just kind of takes for granted.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, in this episode, I feel like I'm on the Russian side because it's like, yeah, like the American military is running this truly incredible program going to other planets and just not telling anybody about it. That's messed up.
It is messed up. And like the way they, granted this is later, but at one point Daniel tries to make the case for the Russian cell. And he's like, we have someone stuck in there. He's a friend of mine. I'm like, oh, well, he's your friend. That like, why do you really care? They don't watch this show. Like.
Yeah, I don't think the Russians care who is stuck in the Stargate necessarily. I don't think that really matters to them. But yeah, then meanwhile, back at the SGC, poor Jack is just like, trying to nap. He probably has a massive headache from his concussion. I just feel bad for him. I'm like, please go take a nap, babe.
He's a baby.
Yeah. And then we have Simmons comes in with Dr. Rodney McKay, which is not significant to you, but he becomes significant. So he's in like two episodes each in seasons 6, 8, and 10. So we'll see him for a little bit. And then that was supposed to be it, but they end up bringing him back for Atlantis. And he's one of the main characters in Atlantis.
Oh.
Yeah. So we are, this is the first lead character of Atlantis that we're meeting.
Okay. I feel like I didn't appreciate him enough.
Well, this is just his introduction.
Oh, that's why he looks familiar. I must have seen him in pictures.
Probably. Are you looking to see what else you've seen him in?
No, I'm looking to see him, like, in context. Yeah, that's why he looks familiar.
Yeah.
But now I'm just wondering what else I've seen him in, but that can wait.
So. Yeah, and so, I mean, he's, the episodes that he's in SG-1, he's kind of an a-hole. And in Atlantis, he's still kind of an a-hole, but he gets a lot more, like, personable.
Atlantis is the Jason Momoa one, right?
Yes. Okay. Although he starts in season 2. FYI.
It's okay. Good things come to those who wait.
Yes, exactly. And he's such a baby. He's a baby. Like, so young. Anyway, so this is our first introduction to Dr. Rodney McKay. And even in this very first episode, we establish some character traits for him that carry through all the way to Atlantis, which is that he's constantly eating because he has low blood sugar. So he's always eating all the time. And he's allergic to lemons. So, like, those things carry through. Oh, and also he objectifies Sam forever and always, which really bothers me. Like, genuinely bothers me, but they made that choice, so.
So we're going to stick with it.
Yeah, we're going to stick with that, apparently, unfortunately.
Oh, it is what it is.
Yeah, in this episode, he says that he's always been attracted to dumb blondes and like calls her sexy, and I'm just like, oh god, Rodney.
But Sam's not dumb, so take it elsewhere.
Yeah, but he continues to objectify her over the years, and I'm just like, please stop.
Gross.
It's like he gets more lovable and less annoying, but the fact that he continues this weird obsession with Sam even in Atlantis, I'm like,
Sam's in Atlantis.
She shows up. Yeah.
Nice.
And I'm just like, can you please stop with the misogyny? Like, just dial it back.
Because Atlantis and SG-1 are concurrent for a little bit.
Yes. For the first 3 seasons of Atlantis, they're concurrent. Yeah.
And at Stargate SG-1 is 11 seasons?
10.
Just kidding. Yeah. My God, we're halfway there.
I know.
Well, at the end of the season,
almost.
We'll be. Oh, I my mean, God.
Yeah.
What the hell? Oh my god. I'm shocked.
Yeah, we're trucking along.
Yeah, damn. Anyway.
Yeah. And so yeah, we get introduced to Rodney, and then Mayborn actually comes in too. So Jack, I think, is going to go home, and Mayborn meets up with him. And he's, like, actually being nice. Like, kind of like I was saying the last time we saw him, he's, like, turning out to be, like, a good guy? Question mark.
We have enough assholes.
He's shady, but, like, he's, like, I heard about Teal'c, and I really hope that you get him back. I'm, like, I think he means it.
Well, because we've got Simmons being an asshole. So yeah. We can't have two assholes.
Yeah. And so he's, like, genuinely trying to help, and like he's like, hey, anything I can do. Then Jack comes back to him later and he's like, we think that Simmons might have that Gwoul who got loose, so can you find out where he is? And Mayborn's like, oh, that's why you want to be friends with me. Okay. But I mean, he offered his help, so it's fine. Then kind of going back to Sam and Rodney, Sam is like completely frustrated with Rodney the whole time. But to be fair, Rodney does make some really good points, because he's saying how in the past they've often bypassed protocols in order to get a connection. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly how they got into that Red Sun problem with those people who were worshiping Freyr. Remember, they came through the wormhole. Went through the sun and it made the sun turn red.
Yeah.
That was because they bypassed a protocol. The Stargate was trying to tell them not to dial, and they did anyway. So, Rodney is right.
He's just cutting corners.
Yeah, they've been cutting corners, and he's like, you shouldn't be doing that. That's exactly how you got into this problem in the first place. Like, you shouldn't be cutting all of these corners. So, he's a bit of an a-hole about it, but he's not wrong. So,
it's true.
Yeah. Yeah, then we have Mayborn. He figures out where Simmons' base is, and so he and Jack go and sneak into the base where the Gwoul is being kept, and they figure out that there is a tape of Simmons asking the Gwoul how to save Teal'c. And so they don't even need to question him himself. And I'm like, good job, Jack. You really figured that out. Meanwhile, like, Daniel and Major Davis are negotiating with the Russians, and Daniel's just like, you know, we're negotiating these small things. What about just, like, what would it take for you to give us your DHD? Like, let's just put everything on the table. And I'm like, you know, I feel like Daniel is getting pretty good at this negotiating thing. You know, like,
well, he's got to get good at something.
He's good at reading walls, okay? That's his specialty.
There are no walls to read at the SGC.
No, but there's a contract to read with the Russians, so...
So, legalese is just another form of ancient language. Communication.
Absolutely.
So they just staple it to the wall, and Daniel's like, yes!
I got this! And so he does manage to convince the Russians to loan their DHD so that Sam can use this method that the Gwoul came up with in order to get Teal'c out of the Stargate. And Rodney is like, oh my god, you're going to blow us all up. And Sam's like, get the hell out of here. I don't like you.
Relax.
when he called her a dumb blonde, and she was like, go suck a lemon. I was like, yeah, yes. You tell him.
Which is like a great way of telling him to drop dead.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. We stand a queen.
Right? Oh, man. Yeah.
When he was like, I'm deathly allergic to lemons, because I didn't know this guy. Didn't know he was coming back. I thought somebody was going to give him some lemon to get him out of the way. Not like kill him, but like
make him
for a hospital visit.
Nah. Nobody would really go that far.
Well, I didn't know he was going to be a recurring character, so I thought this was like a plot device.
No. And there is a moment where Hammond actually offers, like, is willing to resign if it would help buy time to save Teal'c. I'm like, that's so nice.
It's Papa Hammond.
Like, yeah.
Coming through.
He's taking care of his kids. He's like, I'm willing to, like, put myself on the line to help my kids. I'm like, oh.
Papa Hammond.
So the plan does work. And it's honestly, it's really cool because they hook up the DHD and they do all this, you know, engineering configuration stuff, and the Stargate activates, and it's like a ghost wormhole because it doesn't have the vortex, and it's just like the event horizon, but it's like gray and it doesn't have as many ripples as it normally does. I'm like, that's kind of cool.
It's nice when they shake up the computer graphics a little.
Right? Yeah. And so Teal'c comes through and, like, obviously doesn't know anything about what happened. But Colonel Chekov had come along with the DHD, and Daniel's like, I guess you're not getting that back. Whoops. And Rodney is going to be sent to Russia to help them with their Nakoda generator program.
Does that come into play later?
I don't remember. I mean, he comes back in the next couple of seasons, but I don't remember in what context.
Okay.
I'm sure he'll mention. I'm sure he'll complain about being sent to Russia. Like,
Rodney. I'm already annoyed.
He's kind of annoyed. And so then Jack actually tells Teal'c that he owes his life to a Gould, and Teal'c is like, never. I'm like, well, y'all are going to have to kill this Gould now, because you cannot have Teal'c owing his life to this guy.
Teal'c's just going to kill him. Be like, oops.
He's like, I'll take care of it.
My hand slipped.
Oh, so just looking at your comments. There was that scene when Simmons was talking to Hammond about, when he was telling Hammond, like, I know how to fix the problem, but, you know, he's like basically trying to blackmail Hammond into giving up what he knows about the Gould or whatever. And Simmons says, like, it's not, like, it's just, till, like, it's not, he's not one of our own people.
And it's like, buddy. What?
Oh, no.
Indeed. Oh, no, indeed.
I mean, I guess it's implied that he means it in terms of an American way, but it doesn't really matter how he means it, because that's just wrong.
That's just not cool.
Yeah. I mean, I fully believe that Simmons is racist, so.
Yeah.
It could be that, too. I think we see Simmons on exactly one more episode next season, so we don't have to deal with him much longer.
That's good, because I'm getting a little annoyed with this whole shtick.
Yeah, he's almost done.
Good. Because I'm over it.
Right. I don't think there's anything problematic that wasn't supposed to be problematic in these episodes.
No. No, there wasn't. I mean, Daniel hitting on the...
Daniel hitting on Satterfield was weird. That was a weird choice.
But I feel like that's one of those things that's problematic now, but wouldn't have been perceived as problematic then.
Yeah.
Which I guess is the whole point of, is this problematic?
Yeah.
I don't think it's that problematic. Maybe I should get off AO3. I don't think it's that problematic.
It was weird. It wasn't necessarily, like, offensive. It was just weird. It was a weird
choice. Not a lot of character for Daniel.
No, it's not. He flirts with everybody.
I know, but, like, in an inappropriate way. Like, in the, with the power differential, like, Daniel?
I mean, I don't know. Like, it's like he was just kind of, like, teasing her. Doesn't really plan on seeing her again. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's borderline problematic.
Eh. Yeah, I don't think so. But, again, I spend a lot of time on AO3, so my threshold for what is and isn't problematic is very...
And I think Rodney objectifying Sam is supposed to be problematic for his character.
Yeah.
My only issue is that they keep doing it. Like, it would be fine if it was, like, this one time to establish that he's kind of an a-hole. But then the fact that they keep doing it is like, okay, now it's becoming problematic.
Yeah.
Anything else in these episodes you want to talk about?
Nope.
Okay, so next week we are going to be discussing SG-1 Season 5, Episodes 15 and 16, Summit and Last Stand, which is a two-part arc.
Mm.
Arzu, are you ready for your next quote to guess who said it and why?
Yeah.
Oh, swell. It's kind of like Gould Mardi Gras here.
Hmm. See, that sounds like Jack to me. It's the swell that sounds like Jack. But I'm trying to like run it through everybody's voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Jack because my runner-up choice would be Sam. But my thing is they've arrived wherever it is. And there's some sort of celebration because you said it was a big set with a lot of costumes. So it's whatever sort of celebration is going on there. And Daniel has surmised what's going on context and kind of explains it to them. It's either that or like the local alien that like meets them, because there's always the one that's like strangers. And it's like, but you were also human looking. So I don't know how you know that. Has sort of given them the gist of what's going on, and Jack has decided that this means it's gold Mardi Gras.
Okay. We'll find out next week if you're right. That's it for today. If you enjoy listening to our podcast, we would love for you to rate us 5 stars wherever you can. If you want to talk to us about Stargate, you can find us on podcast Twitter, mostly at Roma Waffles, some other things that I don't check, like Tumblr and Blue Sky and Hive. I'm technically on there. You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Chelsea Fairless. Arzu, how about you?
So you can find me on Twitter at Arzu Amin. I'm at arzuamin.bluesky.social. I'm trying to get better about using it. Who knows? By the time you hear this, maybe I am better at using it.
I'm not making any such promises.
I might be. I don't know. I'm just cross-posting at this point. So it's the same thing on every platform. But I'm also on Instagram at arzud2, if that's your thing. Same with Threads. Same with Tumblr. Though I don't use Tumblr. Probably should. I just don't have the skill set. So yeah, that's me. As a network, we are on Twitter at Geeky_Waffle. We are The Geeky Waffle on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Tumblr. We're The Geeky Waffle on YouTube. We are at TheGeekyWaffle.com. And we are on Patreon, patreon.com/TheGeekyWaffle.
Thanks for joining us today. And we'll see you on the other side of the event horizon.